Mike Shea,
Yeah.
you said there were lots of cool stuff, cool topics to talk about tonight on the roundtable. So,
I have four topics and we
holy
can
crap.
veto. I will put them up and we can veto them.
Four
How does that sound?
topics.
Mike
Well,
always
like you
brings
said, we're
ammo
gonna
when he shows up.
record for like 5 hours.
Well, we'll see. Some of these may be quick.
Okay.
So, number one, and perhaps the most controversial, is the death of Fourth Core.
Yeah, the fourth
Yeah.
core?
It just happened. Yeah, it just happened
Death
today.
of Fourth Core.
What ha
what
What
what's
happened?
what's
Oh
the
my
story with
God.
it? Well,
Somebody
wait,
needs
maybe
to know. Wait,
maybe
let's hear the rest of the
we should the other
topics.
three. Yeah, what are the other
Yeah.
three
Okay.
topics?
Number two is the more mundane but equally interesting Monster Vault 2 threats to the Nentir Veil,
Yes.
which I just got in hand yesterday.
Well,
Number
so I
three.
okay, go
Number three is the re-release of the Player Handbook 1 character classes that we're seeing. The Rogue just came out. The Wizard came out a while ago. The Fighter and the Cleric have both come out.
Yeah. Don't you mean the Weapon Master?
Sorry, yeah, the
Weapons
Weapon Master, the
Master.
Templar, the Battle, whatever, and
Yeah.
the Scoundrel, or whatever they're calling him.
Okay.
And
And then
then
the third.
four is kind of related to the death of Fourth Core, which is comments and community feedback on our creative work as bloggers and stuff.
Okay, well,
And
so
how we feel.
I wrote a review for the Nentir Veil, and the Tome Show just did their review with Brian and
So we
Matt
figure that's covered
James.
ground.
So that, well, no, what I don't want to like steal their thunder, so if we
See,
could.
he works with the Tome Show now, and so he's all
Oh, that's right.
he's
Well,
all I'm
I've,
just to be
I've, I would
proprietary and
consider
not
myself a friend of the show.
I don't get it until later this
Whatever.
week, so I don't have info, so I don't want to do Nentir Veil because I would not I would be
Okay, so there
ill-equipped.
you go.
Can I
So
continue
you
to say
if
I
we can
like it gets cool? Is that okay? Is that not spoiling or
I mean
anything?
it's
See, that's not.
see if we can get to something before Jeff Greiner does, then I'm all for it, but
Well, he already recorded, so you're
But
we
not
didn't you
released, so
didn't
we'd be ahead.
No,
But
because I'm editing it tonight, so
I agree that
we
Randall.
actually wouldn't be ahead because I'm actually going to release last week's recorded Dungeon Master Roundtable tomorrow. This
Oh.
one won't get released until Thursday or Friday, so we actually still won't be ahead of them. So, and
Anyway,
anyway, Randall doesn't have it, but if you're
yeah,
in for a treat,
sorry.
Randall, you're gonna love it. It is an awesome product, and that's all I'll
Looking
say
forward
because
to it.
I already posted my review, so everybody knows how
And
to
I
do
will
that.
say this, I'm looking even more forward to it because Mike Shea, I solved the token problem.
What was the token problem? Oh,
The
how to
token
where to put
problem,
them?
yeah, how to make them vertical
Oh.
instead of horizontal.
What'd you do with that? I forget.
I
You got clips or
went,
something.
yeah, I got some clips and I'm going to
Opening my
affix them.
tokens right now.
I'm going to affix them to a Herstart's block of appropriate size and then put a backing, think of an L on the back of the block as like a handle. And so now you only see the one side and you only have, and the thing sets up vertically. I have to assemble them yet, so I don't have pictures yet, but
Yeah,
that's the
post them on the
plan.
blog.
So
Yeah, oh
can I
yeah,
ask a
it's gonna be
question?
blocked out. Yeah, I'm gonna block it out.
Can I
Yeah.
ask a question about that whole fix for the tokens? And I guess
Yeah.
we should tell everybody what you're talking about is that you're talking about a way to take the round cardboard style tokens that they give you these days and make them vertical so they stand up in a 1-inch square instead of lay
Exactly.
flat.
Exactly
And
right.
you don't want the bloody side and the regular side to show at the same time. My only problem is some of the Either everybody's going to have to sit on one side of the table, or some of the people aren't going to be able to tell what the monsters are unless they're constantly picking things up and turning them around to look at it. All right.
Actually,
Yeah, trust me. I have like 30% of my table can't see whatever I'm doing anyway, no matter what I do.
Yeah, to me, with
So,
when you're using Dungeon Terrain,
well,
that's going to be
everything's
an
hidden
issue
behind the
anyway.
dwarven
So, yeah.
fort.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike. Didn't mean to talk over you. Yeah, you're
That's right.
absolutely right, though.
You just
Yeah.
you have to when Mike's on, though. You have to learn
So
Yeah, thanks.
let's talk about the death of Fourth Core then. Somebody want to fill us in on what happened?
Yeah, I had no idea this happened.
Mike, go ahead. I saw it,
Oh,
but go ahead.
boy. Now I got to look up the article. So, and I don't honestly, I don't know that much about Fourth Core. I've liked the concept.
So how about this?
How about while I look up today's article on it, someone else describes exactly what fourth core is.
Yeah, so I'm going to describe what I know about it, and if I'm wrong, everybody needs to jump in and correct me, okay? So as far as I know, it was an adventure or a series of adventures, a program that was more competitive in nature. So you would go through, like, Revenge of the Iron Lich was the name of the first sort of delve for it, right? Where you would go through and it was run more like a tournament competition where you get points for achieving certain goals or for, you know, killing certain monsters or, you know, figuring out certain puzzles or whatever. And so at the end, the PC with the most points wins or the group with the most points wins or something like that.
From what I understand, you also get points for just surviving because it's basically based on being just super hardcore.
Yeah, it's really, really, really deadly. And that's why it's a competition.
And it was designed around the core idea that a bunch of people are saying, well, fourth edition is too easy on PCs and players, mm-hmm. and it's lost a lot of the original first edition dungeon delve-y kind of feel for this kind of bigger encounter and skill challenge-y kind of system. And their philosophy was that's not true, and you can create your own version of fourth edition that is very hardcore, where player death and PC death happen. Not player death, hopefully, but PC death happens often.
I was really impressed with the production quality.
Yeah,
and
the
just
quality
the
amount, of the
The amount of people that they pulled together who were just doing solid work for it. I mean, it was probably one of, you know, them and the guys over at Ben's RPG Pile. You know, they probably put the most production into the stuff that they release as far as, you know, doing image quality and layout and just the amount of design hours they put into it. So,
well, when you're talking about a free production, that's certainly true.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff was free to download, and it wasn't necessarily my style of play, but I liked what they tried to do with it. And I think that I liked the way that they worked within the rules, but made it much more deadly, for there were a lot of save versus death effects that mm-hmm. were much, like I said, much more hardcore. You could definitely die playing this particular game, and it was like, you know, screw your healing surges. You're gonna be dead. So,
I'm sort of like Randall. It wasn't something that my group was interested in, so I didn't even get to like play test it. But, I saw the product and I downloaded it and I went through it. You know, I read through it and I was very impressed with just the quality of the work. It was very good. So.
Oh, and let me input right here. If any of the Fourth Core fans or the writers are listening in on the podcast, please, if we've gotten anything wrong, leave a comment on the blog so that we can correct that, because we're all kind of feeling our way in the dark here.
Yeah,
just a little bit. So.
I'll put a link to the actual, like, the website so people can get their own information. But so what's the story, Mike? Why did it die?
So Sursa V, who goes by Save versus Death on Twitter, posted an article earlier today called "The Death and Afterlife of Fourth Core." I'm sure one of you fine folks will add it to the show notes, the link to the show notes. But essentially what he's saying is that he got a lot of feedback about Fourth Core and got involved in a lot of conversations that sound like the same general twisting conversations that can occur around the edition wars, that, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what you do with fourth core and 4E, it'll never be as good as first edition was.
Right.
Or the fourth edition purists are saying what you're doing to 4E is an abomination and how dare you.
Right.
And, you know, a whole bunch of different feedback from a bunch of different sources. Right. And, you know, I guess the irony for me is I never saw any of that. You know, I all I ever heard about Fourth Core was, I mean, I heard people, the worst I ever heard anybody say about Fourth Core was, it's really cool and the production value is really high for a free product. It's not really something I'm interested in, but I'm pretty impressed. And, you know, I think a lot of people felt that way, but that was about as harsh as I ever heard anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's where I'm at.
How many forums, though, did you hang out on?
I don't hang out in forums. And this actually gets to comments, community, and feedback in our creative mm-hmm. work.
Yeah.
Because I don't go to forums because I don't want to read stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm the same as Mike. I go to the forums like once every 3 months, and I read about 3 pages, and it reminds me why I don't go to forums, and I leave.
Exactly.
Well, here's the paradox that forums and that kind of viewpoint creates when you're trying to be a designer. And these guys were definitely, I mean, they were doing some heavy design work and you know, pouring a lot of their time and energy into this. is that, you know, everybody lauds Paizo for the fact that they have, you know, open feedback and that they incorporate a lot of the feedback and open playtesting into their products. So we demand, you know, we demand this kind of community involvement in the way these products are designed. And so I think Sursa V and those guys kind of wanted to look at the feedback and incorporate that into their design. It's one of the things that detractors say about Wizards of the Coast is that they don't listen enough. And so if you want to listen to people, you kind of have to go to those forums. You can't just stick to Twitter. You can't just stick to one form of feedback. And so, you know, we say for good design, you have to go to the forums. But then we also say, I don't go to the forums because I think everybody on the forums, you know, is a big jackass. So,
which is really ironic. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's really ironic since when 4th edition first started coming out, Wizards of the Coast, all of their statements were around the fact that we've listened to your comments and this is what you guys want. And so that's why there's a new edition.
Well, there's something else about – okay, so here's the thing with the sort of this type of feedback is and I think Quinn Murphy was saying something to this effect earlier. I was looking at my tweet stream when I came on when we were having a big storm, and then I logged off, so I only saw about 5 minutes of tweet stream. But basically, it went something like this: look, people can like something, but they're far less likely to go on and rave about something because they'll get pummeled. So then,
your own blog.
But what I'm saying is, what happens is then the people who are negative are the ones that are the most vocal. And those are the sounds that are heard. You know, it's the old squeaky wheel gets the grease. And so a lot of what's stated is complaints. People don't feel it necessary to loud something or to say something is really wonderful and awesome, you know, unless they also have a major complaint or they just don't say it at all. And so therefore all we see are all, you know, the highest percentage of what we see are the complaints.
Yeah, and it's funny because the different media that you choose, you see different things. Because off Twitter, all I ever saw was people on the D&D hashtag going off about, oh, we're playing fourth core tonight, or, you know, I can't wait to play fourth core. And there were a lot of people that really liked it in, like, the Twitter community. And it's kind of interesting to go back and forth between Twitter and forums and see the different way people communicate.
Mike, you had something you wanted to
add. Yeah, I don't even know where to start with a lot of this. I think that there's probably more danger in trying to get feedback from anonymous people in going through forums when you're trying to you know make something. You know, there's probably little that's more dangerous than that. People that you don't know who have backgrounds that you don't understand, who have motivations that you probably don't understand, are guiding what you are making. And, you know, the more you seek it out, the easier it is to become disenchanted with whatever initially drove you to make something. And, you know, it can get so ugly so fast, and it's just not, you know, it's not all that useful. I think about Apple, and do you know how many user tests Apple did before they started making a phone? None. They don't do user tests. They don't do user testing at all. They don't have 5 people try it out. They make things that they want to use. And, you know, some of the best...
Whoa, correction. They make things Steve Jobs wants to use.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And okay. They sell 100 million of them.
So, yeah, I know. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, Mike, are you saying that the reason that they shut down, because I haven't read the article, sorry to say, but because I'm recording, I don't want to open up the internet. So is the basic gist of it that they've decided to shut it down because of negative feedback?
So he did. And I don't know what's going to come of it. And looking on Twitter, it looks like Dread Gazebo, who is the other fellow I think that's had a heavy influence on Fourth Core, was talking to him on the phone, and they're figuring where they want to go. But one thing he is saying when he gets to the rebirth part is that instead of focusing on a fourth edition based, you know, style of hardcore D&D, he is going to build his own game called Wrath. And that Wrath is going to be designed from the ground up to be the kind of game he wants for this particular style. And, you know, given that what is it, D20 is still fully available for people to use to make their own games. I think there's a lot of options there to do what you want. Then he takes a realistic view of things by saying, you know, it's probably going to be one of a million different systems that are like this, but that's okay because this one is mine.
Yeah.
And I think that's a far better way to go.
And that was Sir Savi said that?
Yeah. Yeah, in that article.
And to me, that's sort of, I mean, and it goes back to what Quinn said. One of the things, and I don't know if you missed this particular statement, Sam, but one of the things he said was that when you're talking about independent projects like this, you have to do it for yourself. And if you're not invested in wanting to do it for yourself, screw what everyone else says. I mean, you can still put it out there. I'm sure I've written stuff on my blog that people say, this is complete crap. But, you know, I wrote it for me. And, you know, I shared it because I thought someone might be interested in it. And if not, that's fine, too. But, I mean, I guess I'm maybe a little disappointed that he's made that decision. Because it's like, you know, at least at this point, even if I wasn't really interested in Fourth Core, knowing that it was based on 4E, which is the game I currently play, I know I could always tap it for direct, you know, use if I needed to. And now if he's going to do another game, well, I probably won't play that because I'm playing 4th edition. And that's not to say one is better than the other. That's not a value statement there. It's only because of what I'm playing. So, you know, he's now lost me because not because he's done anything wrong, but because he's changing the game system that he's going to use. And so I'm a little disappointed there. But I mean, you know, he had to make the decision for what, if it was sapping his psyche or making it miserable to do that project, then yeah, you need to leave. You need to step away because it's not worth the drain. You know, it's not worth the energy to spend on it.
Well, so most people go to work every day and they do what their boss tells them, and that's the energy drain and sap. So the question is, why come home and work on something that you prefer to work on, and then it starts sapping your energy in the same way as your day job does? Well, what's the point of that?
Right. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're releasing it for free.
Right, well, exactly.
It boils down to, and they're not here, so we can't speak for them, but it boils down to their, you know, their motivation behind it is, does Sursa want to become a game designer? And if so, making his own game is great practice, and it's something that he'll both be able to put across the Fourth Core stuff that he invented or created for the 4th edition, and he'll also be able to put across, you know, the product that he's made that's standalone. And for a resume, that probably looks really good for a guy who's trying to break into the design industry. So if that's his main goal, then, you know, more luck to him. Also, though, I would say that he really needs to make sure he's got thick skin, because game designers, you know, they have to be able to take that beating, and they also have to understand that there's a good chance that, you know, they could get fired apparently at any minute of any day. So
there's something to talk about.
Yeah. Nah, we've talked about that before on the DMRT. Yeah. Okay. I think you were in that conversation.
No, I mean, there were recent layoffs.
Yeah,
oh,
but it
there's always recently layoffs.
Yeah, it always comes down to the same thing, that we don't know what's behind those decisions, and we can't really, I mean, the sort of designer use and abuse and suck out all your creativity mill is a horrible thing, but, you know, but at the same time, most people would kill to be in a position at WotC for, you know, 3 months. So, you know.
Yeah, I will say only one thing on it, and that's that it really irks me that people characterize it the way they do, because we don't know. Yeah. And having been in a company that has recently done something similar, it was a voluntary early retirement. It was an opportunity attack. People took the opportunity. Sure, the design was so that they could cut people who were high levels on the payroll and they could cut expense. That's what those are for. But it was voluntary, and they offered them an attractive package, and they left. And quite frankly, if I had poured a lot of energy and spent 20 years designing games, I might be ready to step back. And if they offered me an attractive enough package, I'd be saying, yeah, maybe I can move on. And so to characterize it as a layoff, or even worse, people getting fired, I think it's unfair to the folks that did happen to. And without them actually coming out and saying, yeah, I got fired, or yeah, they really laid me off, then, you know, maybe be quiet because you don't know. So that's my old man waving my stick from the front porch view. Please send the hate mail to @Thaddeus at...
Yeah, thanks.
Don't worry, they'll put it on a forum somewhere.
Yeah, that's right, exactly, which I won't read because I'm not there either. So.
You know, I haven't checked the old hate mail in a while. I probably should.
Do you have a hate mail address? Anyway.
Yeah, it's Thaddeus, or Thad's hate mail. Thad's hate mail at tableforone.com.
Hang on, I got to send something to that.
It's that's... table...
Yeah,
dash,
I got things.
Then the number one, then dash, then the number four.com. I'll put it in chat, and it'll probably be on the show notes too for anybody who.
But anyway, that's my final word. I won't say anything else on it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I always get bothered when anybody starts to dig into Watsy's business and starts telling, you know, talking about what's what when we have no idea what is really going on in the inside, and all we can see are the products that they're putting out, which is all we should really care about.
Right.
And as you can see, the best part of my hate mail is that if you read it incorrectly, it says Thad Shat email.
Yes, it does.
Awesome.
No, I think the last time we had this conversation, you know, I put in my two cents that I worked for a company that did game design in the video game market. And, you know, that the design release and then layoff cycle was... it was a normal part of the design cycle, and it happened. And in a, you know, in an industry that employs hundreds and thousands of people, no big newsletter runs gets sent out when, you know, a quarter of my staff would get laid off at the end of a dev cycle or a dev cycle. And with the game industry, it just looks and feels a lot worse than it is because we know the names.
Can I interrupt you that when you just said that, I had this image of you leading a bunch of dwarves into the mines, and if they came out and they didn't have enough gems, they were out of there, man. You laid their asses off.
Well, fourth core.
It's you know, it was always based on productivity versus pay, and if you're high level and your productivity is seen as going down, which often happens because creativity, you know, creative people come in really excited, and after a while they tend to get a little brain drained, and you know, if your numbers don't match up, you're gone. And that was just part of the cycle. And like I said, hundreds of thousands of people, it happens to some people. And no one sends out emails and posts on forums when it does. But when it happens in the game industry, you know, we know the names of the people whose products we're playing. You know, when you watch the credits, the end credits to a video game, you don't know who any of those people are. But when you see, like, a Dungeons & Dragons book, you see the same names on the cover of the book. So you're surprised when you hear the name of somebody who you recognize has been fired. It just feels a lot bigger than it really is. So,
yeah, did we talk about this one last week, Sam, or the other week? I don't know. I left a singular comment on, I think it was R. Schwab's blog about name recognition.
Yeah, we did talk about that, I think.
Okay, I couldn't remember if we talked about that or not. Yeah, I don't know their names. So, because that's not why I buy the product. But that's I love and respect them. That's not the point.
So part of that is what's funny is if you go over to RPG Geek, there was a thread there a couple months ago that they have this thing called Question of the Day, and a bunch of the regular users there answered these random questions, and they're always RPG related. And one of the questions was, when you buy a product, do you pay attention to the name of the designer, and does that have any influence on whether you buy something or not? And what's funny is the overwhelming response was no, it doesn't. It might make me notice a product because this person wrote something about it, but it doesn't play a big part in the decision to buy it. But yet at the same time, anytime someone's laid off, it's like this big hullabaloo, like, you know, because we feel like we personally know these people because some of them are on Twitter and some of them go on the forums and some of them do this and some of them do that. And then you have this sort of faux friendship. You know, a lot of people have real friendships with them. That's not what I mean. I'm excluding that. But like someone like me, like I have a faux friendship with, say, Bruce Cordell because we've tweeted a couple times, you know, but he's not a close friend of mine. But at the same time, if something were to happen, he were to get laid off, I'd be like, oh, that's really sad. And it would strike me and hit me harder than, you know, if John Smith got laid off from, you know, Johnson & Johnson because they were done developing the new baby oil. You know what I mean? Like, because I don't tweet with that guy. I don't know that guy. So I get what you're saying, but that's part of the problem with the industry being so small is that, you know, we get to know, quote-unquote, know these guys, you know. No, send your comments about baby oil to Thad's hate mail at
table for one. No, Sam, I think you're right, though. I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at with it, too. So
we finished the fourth core conversation, and we're not talking about Monster Vault 2, so I'll take that off.
Yeah, what was the stuff about communication or feedback?
Yes, well, it kind of ties into a lot of this. You know, there's been a lot of talk. Dave Chalker and myself have talked about this a lot, and I have strong personal views about comments and you know, open internet discussion and things like that, and how can we filter that? This kind of gets back into the same thing, and the only other point that I would make about it is I think that feedback, when you're making something, feedback is extremely important, but equally important is who you receive that feedback from. And you need to trust, this is my personal belief. My personal belief is you really need to trust the people that you're going to listen to. Because if you're just listening to people because of what they say or how they say it, you could definitely be getting the wrong stuff. And you know, when I'm thinking about something or making something or getting ready, you know, the first person I trust is my wife, who, you know, makes sure to keep my ego in check. And
trust your wife, too.
Yeah, plays the game and understands how the game is played and knows what people are looking for and gives me good advice on whether something will work. You know, Dave Chalker, again, is somebody else that I'll talk to because he's been in this whole industry for a long time as a freelancer and a blogger and a game designer and everything else. And, you know, he doesn't let his own ego get in the way. And I've gotten very good feedback from him on projects that I wanted to run. You know, those are people that I trust to give me good feedback, and you know, message forums and comments on blog articles. I wrote a blog article on my own blog, which does not have comments, called No Comments, about how about why I don't have comments on my blog.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I have comments on Sly Flourish, and I have it because when I was first putting it together, a bunch of different bloggers that I talked to about it said you need to have comments. It's the only way you'll be able to connect to your audience, and the only way you'll be able to connect to the people that are coming there. And blogging is a social experience, not a one-way conversation. So I put it on there, and I kind of wish I hadn't. And the funny thing is, I don't get bad comments. My comments are almost all great, and you know, many times they're positive on the article, and in a few times they offer up stuff that, you know, goes well beyond the original content of the article. But I don't think, I think like if I got two or three bad comments in a row, I would shut it down. I'd shut down the comments on the articles and then just say, if you want to discuss it, let's discuss it on Twitter where we can discuss it in an even ground.
So, you know, you can turn off the comment for an individual article.
I know. And like
sounds
I said,
like
I,
he just wants to turn off comments.
Individual
blog.
Yeah. So I guess that's pretty interesting to me because I like when I get comments on my blog posts, and I like when they make me go, what's this guy? I disagree. And then I always have to like stop myself from responding right away. And I have to think about it for an hour, and then I go back and try to respond. But I like when that happens because it makes me think about what I wrote, and it reminds me that there's people with other points of view.
Sure.
So that's curious. I'm curious why you wouldn't want comments on.
The funny thing is, so on my I have a personal blog that I've run for about 10 years, and it gets about half of the, you know, audience that Sly Flourish gets. So not very many hits. And actually most of the hits are to one particular page that just happens to be ranked high in Google. So that one doesn't really count.
Right.
But, so if you look at the rest, and what's funny is I get a fair amount of feedback in email. And the email feedback I get is great. And in fact, the funny thing is the email feedback I get on Sly Flourish is great as well, and often better than the comments, because people either feel they have the freedom to talk more about something.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times, it's very rare when I don't know that I've ever taken a comment and turned it into an article, but I've taken email and turned it into an article very, you know, at least three or four times since I've had the site. And I think it has to do, this is a complete, you know, just a thought of my own. I don't have any scientific basis for this, but I think it has to do with the hierarchy of of a blog where you have a main, you have a guy who owns the site, and you have an article that person wrote, and then you have people that all sit below that article who don't have a site, or they probably do, but they're off somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But on this one, they are a lesser being than the original author. So they're already in an inferior position, which means they're already mad. They're already like, now I really have to, if I'm going to, I'm so mad that this guy wrote this thing and it's out here on the open internet, I have to correct this. You know, how dare he write this on this site?
Mm-hmm.
So then they kind of go after it when, they're worried about like, well, people are going to read this, so I better discount it so that people can read my thing. And what's funny is positive feedback will come just directly to you. But negative feedback has to be posted on the site so everyone can read it.
That is true. I mean, I get a lot more, hey, that was a great article you wrote, over Twitter than I do actually people leaving stuff.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, either the comments that say, oh, they'll say like, oh, nice post or something, and then they'll have either a question or a comment that basically says they disagree with something I said. But it's usually not very extensive. But the people that decide to make an extensive comment, it's usually like a long rant. And I don't mean rant in a bad way. I mean, it's like, you're right. They just got emotionally invested in the article and they disagree with it so vehemently, they have to write like a page and a half to dispute everything I said.
And this is what somebody retweeted something somebody else said on, that freedom of speech isn't the right to comment on my blog, it's the right to start your own. And I think that's anytime anybody says, oh, I have a right to, I have a right to post my opinion on your blog, you're like, no, you don't. I pay the bill. I can do whatever I want on my site. And if I don't want you to say anything, if I'm going to block you, then I'm going to block you.
Yeah. And I block a lot of comments. And, the first, there are a few rules for my site. The first thing is if you call names, if you basically, because there are a lot of comments where people just launch right into, oh my God, you're such an idiot, or, what kind of an ass are you?
Yeah.
And that will never make it onto the website. No one will ever see that comment. And
I don't know why I never get comments like that.
I don't know.
I don't really either.
I don't either.
The few negative ones
really?
I get.
Mine go to the spam filter. It must be the way I set up my spam.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be nice.
But the next one is if your whole comment is basically a comment saying, my article on this subject or a similar subject is way better, come read my blog.
Yeah.
I delete those. They're out of there because they apparently have nothing really to say about positive or negative feedback for me. They just want people to come read their blog. And I've done it before, but I'd never be upset if someone deleted my post for that same reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think my rule is if you make me frown, I'm going to ban you from the site. And that's a good solid rule. If you make me unhappy for any reason whatsoever, then don't make me unhappy with your comment.
I like the ones that say earn Chinese farmed gold.
Yeah, those are good.
I always get the Louis Vuitton and fake Rolex watch ones. And I get ones that say, oh, wow, this was a great blog post. I really enjoyed reading it. And you know what else I enjoy? I enjoy this, and then it's a string of gobbledygook, crap. And then you look at their address, and it's like, Viagra for free at china.com,
I guess the spam filter I'm using for WordPress is pretty good at picking up spam because I don't get that much. Or if I do, it's slipping by and I'm not seeing it.
Well, I don't get really – the ones that like Thad said, though, I get occasionally a comment that will say, I love what you wrote, but I do it better.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, great. And I'll leave those comments, but I just usually respond and say, that's awesome if that works for you. This is the way I'm going with it. Have fun graming. I try just to be neutral about it because it doesn't. That's fine if you want to say that. I don't feel like you're gonna say convince every one of my readers that, oh crap, he's so much better. I'm not worried about that.
I look at links as not endorsements or advertisements, but something very similar to that. If there is a link leaving my site, even if it's in the comments, that's kind of like me endorsing it. And I don't want anyone going to some website I don't like or I disagree with. They're just, you know, run by, you know, some a-hole. And from my site, I don't want them thinking, oh, I was reading, you know, myrpgame.com the other day. And then I went, you know, I read this other article and it really sucked. And, you know, if it's not a link I would put in one of my posts or on the sidebar of my site, then I'm not going to let you keep leaving.
Yeah, that's perfectly fair. Yeah.
Since I was sucking up to Apple earlier, John Gruber, who is an independent blogger and big Apple kind of pundit, he wrote an article about why he runs a website called Daring Fireball that gets, you know, very heavy traffic. He's able to make a living on just the blog. And he has no comments on that blog either. And he wrote about it. And his thing was, I don't want to have any single pixel on my site that I don't have control over. You know, that every word needs to be, if people are coming here and reading stuff, I'm not about to hand, you know, 30 to 80% of my article over to other people. I'm going to, it's my article, and I want to know, you know, not, you know, good or bad, for good or ill, I'm responsible for every character that's on there. So I want to have control over every character that's on there. And I think that's certainly an interesting point of view on the topic.
I still can't believe you guys never get any comments that start with like, listen up, ass face.
No, I really don't.
I don't either.
Wow.
I write controversial stuff, so I would expect to get more of it. And I've seen people on forums, on the, you know, when I slum it in the forum, where they'll say things like, "Or I really think he's wrong about, you know, I think that Sly Flourish guy is certainly wrong about this, you know, but I like this other thing." And I'm like, well, you know, at least you like something. So, but I've never, and that's not true. There's probably like two or three, and I'm so quick to ban them that I don't even remember them.
Yeah. See, that's, they disappear. They disappear and go off into nothingness, but I definitely remember them. Because I'm just like, why? You know, why does that guy feel like it's okay to come on my site and call me names or my writers' names? Like, it's, you know, and when I say my writers, I mean the guys I write with. I don't pay them, so they're not my writers. But,
Well, you got us dice bags.
Not yet, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So basically, he's dangling a carrot shaped like a dice bag in front of you.
Well, I probably will now that I'm not going to Gen Con. Right away. I was going to wait till the end of the summer, but I kind of quit my job, so you got to give me a little slack, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
No, I was going to make a general comment about this whole, the whole idea of the way we, like, poison each other or whatever. And I made a comment earlier on Twitter today, and I said, for those that missed it, I said, as nerds, we still fall prey to, quote, all the cool kids are playing X, I don't, so I will be angry about that, unquote. Don't be that nerd. Mm-hmm. Kids, I'm telling you, don't be that guy. Just because someone is doing something a little different than you are, it's okay. They're not ruining the industry. They're not ruining your game. You can continue to play the game how you want. You don't want to be that nerd.
Well,
so don't do that.
Oh, Randall, you're just such an old fogey.
It's like Edition Wars, and not even Edition Wars, but console wars or anything where
any war,
where one guy's standing in his yard, you know, pissing on another guy's yard.
I'm so mad about your slightly different thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's actually a psychological phenomenon, and I wish my girlfriend was here because she's the one getting her doctorate degree in psychology, and she'd be able to tell me what the name for this is. But there is a process that we go through when we have to make a decision. Where we basically convince ourselves that our decision is the best decision we could have made. So, like, if you get to buy one game console, you know, that's how a lot of kids get into that whole video game console war. Yeah, you have to convince yourself that, okay, I could only buy a Wii, a 360, or a PlayStation 3. All right, I bought a 360. So now, instead of having those feelings of I'm missing out on the other fun that I could have had, you know, that buyer's remorse, that opportunity cost, you convince yourself that yours was the only viable decision and that the people who made the other decision made the wrong decision. And some people stop there. They stop with the, I'm fine with my decision. The other decisions weren't as good. But some people take it those extra steps of, well, I've put all this money into 3.5. I don't have the money or the time or whatever to put in 4th edition, or I bought into 4th edition, I don't want to try 3.5, or I don't want to try, Pathfinder, or I don't want to try the Dresden Files game or something else. So they're going to basically say everything else sucks, because that opportunity cost is something that psychologically they have to make up for. And so they convince themselves and then spend time trying to convince others that their decision was the best decision.
Yeah.
I really wish I knew what the name of that psychological thing that's going on there is. But
I think it stems from, I think it's pretty obvious that stems from low self-esteem, which I think a lot of nerds have. And I'm using that term affectionately, guys, because we're all that. I recognize myself. I'm a nerd. It's what I am. I'm okay with it.
Well, yeah, you have a D&D podcast, but
you have to.
Can
own
I?
That,
but wait, so, can I? Know. Can I disagree with you a little bit, Randall? I think it's a
nope.
little bit of a. It's,
no, I'm just kidding.
Okay, right. Okay, then close your ears because I'm going to do it anyway.
Go ahead.
I think the low self-esteem part. I'm not sure that it is all that. I think that's a very specific term that people have some very specific. Definitions of, and I'm not sure it's that, but what I think it is, and you'll probably agree with me, is that people never learned how to not do that. And it's not so much a self-esteem issue, just as if you've never been shown how to behave in a way different from what you were doing, then it's very easy to just keep doing that behavior. And that's the behavior that people fall into as adolescents, and a lot of nerds, as you call us affectionately, and I do too,
have
gotten sort of stuck in certain behavior patterns because we were, you know, for a lot of us, we fought really hard to not be ostracized and not be the sort of the weak link or not be just the nerd person for a long time. And so you sort of get set in your behavior patterns and you have a certain sort of confidence about that. I'm not sure that it's self-esteem, but there's a second thing, and that is that a lot of this is online. And there's a disconnect between what happens when you post something online. Even if you tweet with that person, even if you have emailed somebody, if you've never met them face to face, there is a disconnect there. And someone my age, you know, like, okay, kids that are 18 right now, they grew up with this. So maybe it's different for them. So I can only really speak for myself. But for me, there's a definite disconnect there. You know, when you're riding the city bus and you look around and everybody's got an iPod in their ears and nobody's talking to each other, nobody's looking at each other. We didn't do that when I was young. It didn't exist. You had to interact with people, even if that interaction was as little as making eye contact when you're getting on the bus or, you know, saying hello to the person who's sitting down next to you. People don't do that anymore. And there's just this disconnect, and that sort of bleeds out into the internet, and it allows people to maintain that behavior that, you know, maybe in polite company or maybe in a group of people in the same room, they wouldn't necessarily act that way, or at least they would maybe have open ears for the rebuttal, whereas online, they don't have open ears for the rebuttal. I don't got to listen to you. I already said my piece. Why do I got to listen to you? I disagree with you. We already know that.
Right. It's insular behavior. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with you. But at the same time, when you say these are things that they've never learned not to do, mm-hmm. where does that behavior come from? Someone has taught them how to do that. And that's mm-hmm.
Well, that's why I say
that was the protective.
But that's what I mean, though. That was the protective thing that they did in order to justify their behavior when they were being beat up because they were nerds. Right. And right. even though now they may be adults making good money in the IT industry with a family and they're happy, they still fall back to that protective behavior when they get into a realm where somebody's attacking the thing that they like.
Yeah, which is a real shame because I don't know how to not. I mean, I don't do that. I think I owned my nerdness once I got laid. I mean,
probably true.
Again, send the hate mail to Thaddeus, hatemail@table41.com in care
By
of
the
Dan.
Way, I love your auto reply on the hate mail.
Oh, you already sent one, huh?
Yeah. What does it say? What's it say? I don't think I've ever sent anything.
You've never seen your own hate mail?
No, that's Randall.
Thaddeus said, yeah, it's very funny. You should send some hate mail to Thaddeus and see.
I have to do that.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let people send it if they want to hear the auto reply.
It's enjoyable.
And it's not an auto reply. I hand type a message to
you
each.
You did not.
Yeah, right.
Don't.
But anyway, but my
don't
point
point
is,
at the guy behind the curtain, man. Come on. Yeah.
The point is that I owned my nerdness early on, and while sometimes you get a little ting. It's like you got to blow it off because, wow, there's a whole lot worse things that are going on in the world. And, you know, your energy can be spent elsewhere. And if you waste energy on crap on the Internet, in quotes, then you are doing it wrong. And so, you know, it's like, cheer up. It gets better. Play the game you like to play. And it's all cool. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
But people will, I mean, that's a message that we've been preaching for a long time.
And it is. So I continue to reinforce it. Yeah.
You know, what is it? Sam says, play the game you want to play, or play the game you love. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Play the game you want to play.
Right. Be the game you want to play.
Yeah, as long as you're having fun, who gives a crap what anybody else is doing?
Exactly.
And that's ultimately what it comes down to. It doesn't matter what you're seeing on the internet. When you sit down for your Friday night or your Saturday night game or your Wednesday night game or whenever you game, every time you sit down to game, you know, you're not going to pull out, hopefully, your phone and your computer and go on the internet and be like, man, I am playing 4th edition right now, so all you 3.5ers, you suck. I mean, you're not going to do that because you're at the table playing the game having fun. Who cares what the 3.5ers are doing? They're probably sitting at a table having fun too, you know?
So the question is, like, it seems to be an element of human nature, though, that people will do that.
Right.
So it's not so much how do we convince them not to do that, because I think they're always going to do it. It's how do we react to it?
And how do we
react by shutting off the pipes? I don't know. There's just certain sources that I just don't go. I'll very rarely go to either, like, the two biggest forums that I know of are WotC's forums and N-World. And I go to WotC's forums to kind of check out the Karop boards once in a while because I want to know how to kill people who optimize their characters. And I'll go to N-World, you know, I don't know, every so often, like once every 3 months. And again, I'll stay there until I hit my first asshat. And the minute I hit an asshat, then I close the window and go back to Twitter. So the big question is, why is Twitter so much nicer? Like, you know...
I think because it's live. It's like a live chat.
We're selective about who we can friend them to.
Yeah, it's so easy to ignore someone.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right. I guess I have gotten a couple of bad ones, and you just block them, and they're gone.
Yeah, but if you think about it too, like when you first go to Twitter, if you don't have any followers, you're tweeting into the void. There's nothing there. And then when you get a few followers, it's like, ooh, okay, so I've got these people that are listening to what I'm saying. If you start saying crappy stuff, then they're going to quit following you, and then you're speaking into the void again. So there's a consequence to having bad behavior on Twitter. Right. There's not so much a consequence on a forum, because even if you get banned or 86'd, you can just start a new account, right? Who cares?
Yeah.
It's that Gabriel's internet theory of anonymity. Is that what it's called?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From Mike Krulik and Jerry.
I still need that shirt. I love that shirt.
Just the idea that Twitter carries less anonymity because you're trying to – the whole point of Twitter is to build relationships with people, you know? When you start just don't completely – it's the internet fuckwad theory, I think is what it's called. And when you start acting like a complete fuckwad, people stop following you and you lose all of that basically equity that you've built up. And so people are afraid of that on Twitter. So there is an etiquette that is completely lacking in forums.
Such a great comic.
Can you get me a link to that particular theory page? Oh, thank you. I'll put it in the show notes.
By the way, guys, Sursa V is going to be joining us here in just a minute.
Oh, excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent. Yeah. Good deal.
That's right. Daddy came through.
We're going to make him talk about the characters, the character re-releases, right? The player.
Yep. We're not going to ask him anything about Fourth Quarter.
No, we're really not interested in what's going on.
We covered that already, and you were
We already here. Talked about that. How do you feel about 3.5? So how about before he comes on real quickly, we talk about that, the re-releases. Do you guys have a chance to take a look at the Rogue?
No.
I have not had a chance of looking at the re-release of the characters.
I was... Wizards both screwed me and made me happy at the same time. Because I was, you know, my recent article, with all these re-releases, they re-released the races from, like, Player's Handbook 2 and other stuff, I think last month.
They did?
Uh-huh. And so a lot of the Player's Handbook 2 races now have selections for their stats.
Oh, yeah, for their secondary.
You know, the very essentialies feel to it. And I was preaching to my group that I'm just now teaching how to play D&D about not picking optimal races, but picking races that fit the story and the flavor that you want. Mm-hmm. And so my race and class combo for the character that I play in a game I play is not optimal, or wasn't optimal. and then Wizards re-released it, and now it is optimal, and so that argument just completely disappeared. So now I have to basically go out and make a non-optimal character so I can lead by example.
Yeah, I'd say the one disappointing thing I saw with the Rogue, I've only just briefly glanced through it, and the only disappointing thing is that Dagger Master still has a crit on 18, 19, or 20, which I think any crit above 20, any crit greater than 20 easily starts breaking the game in higher levels. So it's sad to see that.
Well, Rogues are just assassins that haven't reached their full potential, so...
I think a Dagger Master Rogue.
Though, so what's still... up with the hate, Randall?
Yeah.
Why can't you just play the class you like and not have to dodge
classes?
Yeah, I know. Classes?
That's terrible. I'm not listening to my own advice, am I? I'm a bad person.
Terrible.
It's the bourbon talking.
Oh, you're drinking that's bourbon?
I was. It's
you didn't
gone
share.
Now.
Oh, it's Bourbon Tuesday. Yesterday was Ice Cream Monday.
That's right.
Wait, what is this? What am
bourbon
I missing?
Bourbon Tuesday.
Pete? Yeah. He has an ice cream day once a week and a bourbon day once a week.
And it's important to have traditions. These are important things.
That's right.
But I've decided that before the DM roundtable, I will be having bourbon.
Sursa is inbound, so it'll be Scott Murray.
What?
That's his name.
Oh, I thought it was Sursa V.
An alias of an alias.
Yeah. That's the internet for you, is everything is just layers on layers, like an onion or a parfait.
Maybe it's just some random guy you're having join the call, and so, you're like just trying to,
awesome,
you're trying
actually
to see what's going on and what we're going to ask and how he's going to answer.
Does that mean, according to the anonymity theory, that because he's anonymous and has an audience, he's going to come on and just yell shitcock and then hang up?
That's right, yeah.
There is a good chance that this will play out.
And we just—I think now we've added the total mature themed tag. To
this we'd already done that a while ago.
Yeah.
All right, and here he comes, Sam. If I break your recording, it's okay because I'm recording. So.
All right.
I don't
think I'm going to break my recording. Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Welcome, Scott Murray, aka Sursa V, aka Say versus Death. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's all good.
All right.
How's it going tonight, Scott?
And the show's over. So
yeah,
everybody
yeah,
has
so, no, we're,
I'm sorry,
we're recording.
Are we not my, like, right in the midst here?
Yeah. We've been going for a little while, but
I just woke up. So, what can I help you with tonight?
Well, Mike Shea, Sly Flourish, came on today and told us all about your recent articles, and I had not read it yet, and so we wanted to kind of get news from you instead of, I mean, we kind of talked about you without you being here, but now we'd like to kind of get your side of the story, so it's all
okay.
It's all kind of clear.
So what's been said so far?
There's lots of recap.
Lots of cussing
I can recap since I was the one who brought it up.
Okay.
Hi, Scott. This is Mike Shea from Sly Flourish. So from what I gathered in the couple of times I read your article, first of all, I think all of us here talked about how we felt about Fourth Core when we saw it, and all of us were very impressed with it. We thought the production value was great. We liked the energy. I think, you know, some of us, I of course played it to its completion. They didn't actually play it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks. I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed the work.
I lied. I didn't. But, but I think everybody really liked it. I really like the idea behind it. You know, I've been one of the ones that said that fourth edition really looks like it's too easy on players. Mm-hmm. So it was good to see some alternatives. Anyway, so we read the article, and it sounded like you got feedback from a bunch of different sources, and a lot of that feedback kind of steered back towards edition war kind of stuff that either came down on the side of, since it's not first edition, you can never really be a good dungeon. You can never really build a good dungeon delving game, or you are tearing apart our golden child of fourth edition. And how dare you go and get into the rules and do the evil stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
And that all of these pressures, you know, kind of ended up tearing the project apart. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, when the, you know, I mean, Fourth Core started out back in 2009. So, I mean, it's been a little bit since, you know, I first started doing this stuff. And at that point, Fourth Edition was still pretty new, right? And we weren't really seeing a lot of the different things that the system could do, you know, later on. We started seeing a lot of I think Vroom Wizards, a lot of really cool stuff that started to take the system in new directions. But at that point, the big thing was the Edition War. And that's where the little, what is it, on the sidebar, the site, that little Edition War non-participation badge, like that came right out of, I mean, that was the kind of prevailing discussion that was taking place in the D&D community was, 4E is shit and 3.5 is the one true way of D&D. And then, you know, it just mirrored the stuff that happened when second edition came out. I'm sorry, when the third edition came out and the second edition, people were like, 3.5 or 3.0, it's the death of D&D and all this. And so that was kind of the prevailing discourse, right, is that it was people were just fighting about the game instead of going, okay, what is it that is fun about D&D and how can we talk about our favorite editions? Because the OSR was picking up steam at that time too, which... Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the stuff that comes out of the OSR, but I don't really like the OSR. Does that make any sense? Like, I used to, before I did the 4E stuff, I actually wrote for a game called Basic Fantasy. And I think I lasted all of one day because I got onto Dragon's Foot or something. And it was just, you know, because I really like first edition. I like the retro clone stuff. And a lot of the things that I wanted to do was actually taking some of the innovations in like third edition and fourth edition, like templates, for instance. I love templates, and I'm like, hey, what if we did template stuff but for AD&D monsters? And they're like, get that fucking modern shit out of here. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like, I am done. So I mean, I started Fourth Core with this goal of showing people that they could play kind of the really gritty, brutal, deadly, like Tomb of Horror style dungeon crawl in fourth edition, which at that time was seen as the, you know, kittens and rainbows and flowers of role-playing, right? Because that was the thing, is that nobody, you know, nobody ever died in fourth edition, and all the characters were invincible, and just a lot of the, it's a lot of, I mean, we've all heard it before. Well.
Or seen it before, witnessed it before.
Yeah, or witnessed it before, right?
And I ran a 1-30 game, and I could tell you, it's really, really hard to kill him.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Aofel might disagree with you.
Yeah.
But
AOFL was level 3.
So, but I mean, after that point, you know, my big thing was trying to stay as fidelis to the system as possible, right? To be like, because that was kind of the linchpin, was I had to stay within the boundaries of 4th edition if I was going to demonstrate that 4th edition could be what I said it could be, right? So I couldn't do a lot of really crazy things that sort of, you know, circumvented the rules or contravened the design principles, because then people would say, well, this isn't fourth edition. This is just, you're using the fourth edition chassis, but you're just tearing it apart and doing, you know, something different with it that makes it, you know, fundamentally not fourth edition, whatever you want to say about it. But that changed over time. I think the game grew and changed in ways, as I remark in the post, that made it less of an issue. I think the Edition War stuff has kind of calmed down, at least from my perspective. By and large. And so for me, I was less concerned with, you know, trying to convince people that fourth edition could be what I, you know, said it could be, and focused more on, okay, how can I just transfer my vision of like a dark, chaotic, brutal, fast-paced role-playing game through my favorite, because fourth is my favorite edition. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where, you know, the last year of development has been less of us trying to sort of stick to the principles of 4E and starting to depart from those principles. And people who have been following my work for the past several months will start to see that I've been becoming more and more extreme in my departure. So, like, I'm very much, like, cranking up the damage, and I'm doing a lot of save or die stuff. And a lot of stuff that circumvents the skill system and the class system. I remarked on Twitter, like, if it was up to me, you know, the only character design choice that you would make in a role-playing game is what suit you want to be buried in. Like, that's pretty much, that's my opinion on it. And it's just, you know, I won't belabor it, but it's just getting to the point where the vision I have for the kind of game that I would like to run and play and design is becoming more and more divergent from the direction that fourth edition is taking. And as we've seen in the past several weeks, the brand has once again been plunged into controversy and tumult and all this stuff. And, you know, I've had conversations with Jerry of Dread Gazebo and some others of, you know, how wise is it to kind of hitch our wagon to fourth edition?
Well, so where are you hanging out where all this is occurring?
Where am I hanging out?
Well, like, I mean, I think we were talking earlier. We spent a lot of time earlier in tonight's show talking about how we get feedback from people and where we hang out to kind of talk to the community and things like that. And, you know, I know my personal rule is I just don't go to the forums. You know, I avoid any of the forums because it just gets, you know, I go there for about 3 minutes and then I get mad and I leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, but when I spend a lot of time on Twitter, and a lot of it comes from the self-selection of the people you're going to follow, the people that we follow, you know, end up being pretty positive people. So we're not going to, you know, if somebody gets on about the edition, where you block them and you never have to see them again.
Yeah.
I was looking over your site at some of the comments, and almost all the comments that I can see are pretty positive.
Yeah.
About the stuff that you've done there, and you know, justifiably positive.
Yeah.
So, but when we hear about, you know, you just mentioned the resurgence of the edition war and the latest things that are going on. I mean, aside from, you know, the WotC, you know, the potential, you know, could have been WotC layoff, and then people talking about, well, what's, you know, is fifth edition going to come out or whatever like that. I haven't really seen anything that kind of restirred up the edition war.
Sure. No, I mean, I kind of read the same venues everybody else does. Like, as far as the feedback for fourth core goes, I think it's important to know, and I made this point earlier on Twitter before I went to bed. It really doesn't have a whole lot to do with specific feedback to fourth core. Almost all the feedback that I get is very positive. You know, like Mike said, I mean, a lot of the stuff comes through that already self-selected community of people who enjoy what we do. My issue, and I should preface by saying that I don't really have that thick skin, and I'm easily aggravated and frustrated, and
as can be seen by your mechanical traps.
Oh yeah, like there, I mean, and that's kind of, you know, strangely enough, that's sort of part of why fourth core is what it is, and why I'm kind of moving in the direction that I'm moving, is because a lot of this stuff reflects something about the author. But I mean, really, to take today's example, I got linked to the new Legends and Lore column, which I love. I mean, I love Mike Merles. He's awesome. But the way people talk to and the way that people talk about him, and the reason I bring him up is because a lot of what I wanted to do with fourth core was the stepping stone to a career in this sort of thing, right? So I looked up to people like Chris Perkins and Mike Merles, and I was like, man, I want to be these guys. Like, I want to do what they do. And then it's just the reality sort of set in, like, wow, they spend a lot of their time just dealing with dicks on the internet who talk to them in ways that, I mean, seriously, like, if someone talked to me like that in person, like, I'd be banned from Gen Con. That would be the end of it. Like, they'd have to come fucking bail me out. And it's just, so it's not so much, and I try to make this point, it's really hard to explain, but I really, really just honestly hate the tenor of the D&D online community. I mean, maybe it's me just kind of looking at the blood-filled basin half full, or maybe half empty is the bad one. Half empty is the bad one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all perspective.
If you're safer versus death, half empty is bad.
If it's filled with blood, even half full is bad.
Yeah. Where do you see it?
Well, I mean, the Wizards forums is the primary place that I see a lot of this stuff, which I hear has a reputation. And part of it is that when they release the new commenting feature on the actual DDI articles themselves, so you can see those comments like right there in the right there in line. And I mean, I get a lot of trackbacks through my blogging software. So I go out and visit these things. So I mean, I get stuff from N-World, mostly N-World, and mostly Wizards forums, which, I mean, I don't know how representative that is. But I mean, more often than not, it throws me into this doom spiral of hate, and I'm just like, I don't want to. This doesn't appeal to me. It really puts me off, even if it has nothing to do with anything that I'm doing. It's just like I tried to look up information about Heroes of Shadow a couple days ago because I got like a gift card, and I'm like, oh, Heroes of Shadow sounds kind of cool. Let me look it up, and if you can imagine what I found, right? It's just, you know, pages and pages of discussion, or about Essentials. Like, I love the Essentials stuff, wanted to learn more about it, and it's pages and pages of, you know, this game's gonna die by Mike Merle's hand. I mean
Google searching,
going to the sites themselves and using their, like, you know, built-in search functionality, or through trackback stuff, because I get tons of trackbacks, and I kind of just kind of take it from there. Though, I mean, personally, I don't really talk about these things a whole lot because I don't really have a very articulate position on it. It's just, it's very just intuitive. Like, I just don't like it. I don't like the way people talk to each other.
I had to chuckle at that when you say you don't have a very articulate position because you seem like a very well-spoken and very well thought out in your whole process of this. Mm-hmm. And so, I think you're coming through a lot more succinct and a lot more clearly than a lot of people would. Mm-hmm. I would just say people are, you know, asshats when it comes to forums, and I stay completely away from them. You know, the internet is a lot like Twitter is a microcosm of the way I use the internet. It's very selective. I have certain sources that I go to for information, and I, you know, Google is only used to look up stuff that I have no idea what I'm doing for. You know, if I need to fix a door or something in my apartment, Google is great for that. But if I'm looking for information on D&D, there are sites I go to and sites I stay completely away from. And N-World and the Wizards of the Coast Forum, you know, that's like the freaking Wild West to me.
I hear that's the Dragon's Den. Like, it's just...
Yeah, it's okay. It's just any dick can slap on a gun and go around shooting people until someone faster than him comes and shoots him. And so I stay far away from those places.
Yeah.
It's more like any gun can slap on a dick.
Because, yeah. to give a specific example, which actually got an unusual amount of discussion kind of outside of, I guess what you can call like the fourth core circle. There was like a 20 or 30, I stopped reading after a certain point, but it was like a 20 or 30 page thread that started out where just like, hey, Fourth Core Armory came out, and what do you guys think of this? And then some dude started thread shitting, and 20 or 30 pages later, it was this really like drag out brawl on the forums about just really, I thought, trivial shit. And the problem is I didn't like.
I can go.
Oh, hi. Hi. How you doing?
No, it's okay. Thaddeus can't get back on the call, so we'll just ignore it.
Oh, no.
Randall got dumped, too. He's back.
I'm back.
Thaddeus got dumped. Thaddeus was hosting the call. I wonder if his internet went kafooey.
Sure.
Should
I continue? Like,
yes, please do. Well, wait, let's say hello to Tracy first. She joined the call about 10 minutes ago, and we didn't want to interrupt Scott, so... Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Finally made it home.
Awesome.
You had a good dinner, though, right?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And I had sangria, so.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, nice. I just drank
an entire bottle of that. let me know when you want to jump back in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Continue your rant.
Yeah.
Okay.
I lost you at... Some guy had
forum with 20 posts, and it went into the death spiral.
Yeah, I mean, the TLDR was just I was looking at this right because you know I got the track back. I'm like, why not look at it? And it just kind of frustrated me that this work that we do that's ostensibly supposed to be like here's some cool stuff, and we got people who like it, and we kind of distribute it, you know, among them, and it's really just take it or leave it, and it's to give people something to have fun with, and it results in, with almost no provocation, the OP was just, hey, Fourth Core Armory came out, let's check it out, right? And, you know, 30 pages later, I mean, people are at each other's throats, and it was out of control, and I'm like, how can people, like, is what makes people act this way about something that's supposed to be a form of entertainment? And that's something, and again, I say this coming from a perspective where, I don't have the thickest skin in the world. I'm easily frustrated and annoyed and aggravated, and I just looked at it, I'm like, is this what our work is doing in the community? Is this giving people more excuses to, you know, fight about, you know, save or die, or, I mean, all this stuff that really at the end of the day should be just, if you like it, you know, right on. If you don't, walk the fuck away. But I mean, I hate to put so much emphasis on it because really, you know, if we're talking kind of about the post and my decision to sort of step away from 4E design, that's kind of just like one point among a lot. And I left a lot out of the post because some of it's just like personal stuff that I have no interest in describing, and nobody has any interest in hearing. Because I mean, the big thing for me, and I hope it came through in the post, was I'm starting to feel like fourth edition as a system is I'm having a lot more trouble working with it because of the vision that I have for the play style I'm trying to create. And I'm starting to resent a lot of aspects of modern D&D design. And it's becoming like much more of a problem for me. But I mean,
is it your view that's changing it, or is it the direction of the game?
You know, I think it's both. I think it's really, you know, I'm becoming a lot more extreme in what I want to create. I'm becoming a lot more. I'm very much like for what I call the extinction of the player character, and this idea of, you know, more player skill stuff and things with, like, you know, magic items being the defining characteristics. I mean, just a lot of this, you know, really boring just game theory stuff. But at the same time, I'm seeing the game, the fourth edition game, take a different direction that I don't think even its developers know where it's going. I'm seeing a lot of contradictory stuff. You know, people are like, you know, Mike Morrow's Legend and Lore column, where his last post was like, how can we strip down the game as much as we can, and what can we learn from it? And then you got like, you know, the sea change happening with the staff. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, we're not in any kind of fiscal relationship, but I became very aware of the fact that Fourth Core, you know, by its name, it's hitched to the fourth edition brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what that might mean. I mean, I'm not one of these kind of, you know, camping-esque doomsayers who are going to be, you know, showing up at the Wizards product seminar and going, fifth edition, make the announcement, goddammit. Like, I really think that's kind of out of line. But I really do think that the game is going through a lot of changes, and there's a lot of different interests that are going to shape that game. And it just seems like, you know, kind of looking forward, there's going to be, you know, a breakup has to happen, right? Like, it's going to be something that's going to become more difficult than more easy for me to work with.
So tell us about Wrath.
Oh, man. I don't even know. It's going to be nuts. Really, I think the best way to describe it is a game that is created from the ground up to create a very, very specific play experience. So it's not going to be a retro clone, right? So it's not going to be something that tries to give people a sense of nostalgia for things like AD&D. It's not going to be a Dungeon Crawl Classics kind of thing. It's not going to be a D20 system, you know, or an OGL kind of product. It's going to be something that's completely standing on its own and extremely niche. Like, we're toying with mechanics like one hit, one kill. Like, there's no hit points. There's no levels. There's no there's no ability scores, everything. It's sort of like playing Mario, right? Where if you got, you know, that weird looking Brett Favre football guy in Mario 3 is going to run into you in Bowser's Castle, and that's it. You have to start over. So, I mean, we're doing a lot of thinking about what we're going to do with it, because at this point, not a lot's been set in stone. It's really more of a concept than it is, you know, anything kind of written up. But the idea is to take the stuff that we did with Fourth Core, right? So, I mean, it's chaotic. It's going to be deadly, really high, what I like to call a frame rate, right? How quickly can the players and the DM get through the actions that the game works in, right? So, like, when we talk about fourth edition, we would think of the frame rate as, like, how fast does combat go, right? How long does it take for me, if I've got, you know, 20 minions on the table, how long does it take for the DM to adjudicate? Or if the players are controlling, you know, if they have, like, you know, companions they're controlling, or if they have all these different powers, how long does it take for them to actually go through and roll the dice for those powers and calculate damage and pick a target and come up with a tactic? Part of it, too, is pushing the GSL, because the GSL has these tacit limits on the kinds of content that can be published as far as maturity goes, right? And I know Fourth Core stuff, as it stands now, is already skirting that boundary. I remember going to Gen Con in 2009 and asking about it, and they were like, you know what, they're taking it on a case-by-case basis, and there's a lot of stuff that I want to do that's a bit more geared towards adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not so much PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're decidedly taking a kid-friendly or at least possibly kid-friendly tack with their game. They really want to stick with that, so...
Yeah. which I think is, I mean, I think makes sense.
Sure.
And just like, you know, the shallow, I mean, the game is unabashedly shallow. I mean, the fourth core is the same way. It's like, there's no story. It's an excuse plot. You're just going to be, you know, you're in the dungeon and you got to get like this sort of plot advancement. Go find it and don't die in the process. Right. And so things like that and kind of stuff built into it to allow, make competition easier, because that's something that fourth core has really stepped into, is this idea of competitive D&D, which is very strange because I'm very non-competitive as a person. But a lot of people are taking to this idea like, hey, if I run through this dungeon, I can get a score and compare that score to other people who are playing the same adventure, right? And I really want to have this meta game surrounding Wrath, where people can not only compare themselves against each other, but create collaboratively the content through which they're going to be running. Like it's still kind of in the clouds, but I'm imagining kind of this open source dungeon project, right, where people can submit their rooms. And they can submit their ideas, and they kind of get put in the pot, and it percolates. And then people run through that stuff, and they can vote it up or down. And they can, you know, take their score and take it back to the community. Be like, listen, you know, we got this. We did this good. This is our team. And people can, like, what is it? I don't play a lot of video games now, but what do they call them? Like achievements or stuff on Steam, right? Where it's, you know, like, I'm the best Counter-Strike player. It's awesome.
Yeah, achievements, badges, things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, and I apologize for sort of the, it's very, a lot of this stuff is very in the clouds. And
sure.
So we're really trying, like I talked to, you know, Jerry Lanier for like an hour and a half on the phone today trying to figure some of this stuff out.
Right.
Everything has to start somewhere, you know.
Right.
And you've certainly shown that you can ship products, so I think we'll be eager to see it.
Yeah, and that's been part of it too. Is it's I have so much respect for people that can do this sort of thing on a regular basis, because it takes a lot to put an adventure out. Like it's not one thing to just write encounters and throw them out there. I mean, you got to have your formatting pitch perfect, and you've got to have, you know, your pre-gens optimized and like the printable maps and all this stuff. And it's a lot of work, and it's a bit more work than I kind of anticipated. Mm-hmm. And it got away from me.
I was going to ask about that, because I mean, you know, sometimes you'll see this in a lot of areas where people will pour just an absolute ton of energy into a project and get it really far along. And in some cases, if it's a big single project, they'll get it like 80% of the way there and then never actually ship it. And then in other cases, you'll get people who ship a tremendous amount of stuff in a short amount of time and burn out really quickly. And in reading the article that you wrote, the subtext I was trying to read into is how much of this is actual from community feedback and how much was, you know, you produced a whole lot of stuff pretty quickly that clearly had a lot of energy behind it and clearly a lot of effort behind it. And was it just, you know, Did that itself kind of become a new burden of like, no, God, no, I got to keep this up?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say yes. Part of it is, I mean, I won't talk too much about it, but things are not so great at my job right now. I think like I work in the newspaper industry, right? So like a lot of print industries, they're having a lot of trouble, and it's finally caught up with the place I work. So I've been pretty much like on the job hunt, and it all came very suddenly. And I have like health issues that I've been dealing with as well. So it all kind of came at once. So, I mean, I could keep up doing what I was doing, maybe at a slower pace, but I could at least, you know, keep at least one step ahead of what had to be, you know, what had to be shipped and when. But then all of this stuff sort of hit at once. And I wanted to be optimistic about it. Right. Like I could have stepped back a bit longer because I did go on a hiatus for like 2 or 3 weeks. But I feel this obligation to like give the people what they want. And so I'm not one to ask for like, you know, time off. Like I felt bad enough delaying SND02. I felt horrible about it. So, I mean, it's a lot of different stuff that's kind of confluencing at once. And, you know, the article doesn't evenly address those because I'm a kind of very private person. So I don't like to write these long posts about like, oh man, woe is me. I fucking lost my job and all this stuff. It's like, it's just like, you know what? We're all people. We have personal issues. Just take my word for it, and we'll move on.
You do realize that you just told the entire world.
Yeah, well,
the entire world being what, like our parents,
all 30, our 30
five,
listeners.
Yeah, our my five wife. Listeners, yeah.
No, it's gone up, Sam. It's at least 30 now.
Oh man,
being my mom, and I know Fred. Sam's mom.
Yeah, Fred.
Fred, listens Fred, to him. Fred, that's true.
Mike's wife.
Yeah, Michelle.
But let's see here. Yeah, I mean it's very much a confluence of, you know, it's one part feeling put off by the attitudes of the community. It's another part, you know, maybe feeling like I'm being constrained by the fourth edition system. Another part feeling like I shouldn't be kind of putting all my what do you call it, eggs in one basket or something like that. Because another part of it too is I do a lot of stuff for Kobold Quarterly, and my worry is I don't want to get typecast. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Because a lot of the stuff, like I was writing, it kind of came out a couple weeks ago. They had that really cool artifact contest at Kobold Quarterly, and I'm like, hey, I'm gonna write an artifact. Never really wrote one before, and people were giving all these like great fourth core artifact ideas, and I'm like, no, this is like for this is straight work,
mainstream.
Right? Yeah, like this is gonna go on at 7 p.m. And so I mean that's part of it too. Is I worried that I was going to be typecast or, you know, seeing as somebody who can only sort of hitch my star to fourth edition's wagon, right? That if I struck it on my own and tried to really do something creative on my own, you know, I wouldn't have the capacity to do it. And that's something that I really wanted. I was really self-conscious about. So yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of,
well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I think there's all, you know, I've been talking a lot. I'm going to let other people ask you questions.
Well, actually, go ahead, Mike, because we need to wrap this up in about 10 minutes. So,
okay, so you might as well just finish with me continuing to talk.
Yeah, you might as well just keep talking.
I think that there's a lot of, I mean, again, like I never actually ran the fourth core stuff at my own table, but the reading a lot of those initial things and seeing, I mean, what I particularly liked about it is there's a bunch of pundits that kind of sit around talking about things, and then there are people who actually do something about it. And clearly you are in the category of, you know, I want to see the game. I want to see a certain game, a certain kind of way for myself. So I'm going to go make it that way.
Yeah.
Which is a really powerful concept for tabletop gaming that we cannot do with video gaming.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know, we could sit here arguing all day long about what Blizzard does for World of Warcraft, and it doesn't matter because they're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But in D&D, we can all do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And reading some of that initial fourth core stuff, while I didn't use it all directly, I certainly took the attitude from it and, you know, made some fourth core-y style adventures that I ran my players through that probably weren't, you know, quite as extreme as you would run them, mm-hmm. but certainly scared them, right? When they're like, holy
cow. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
that's something that was really intentional. I've been posting to the blog since Halloween 2009, and I think there's all of three editorial pieces on there. Like, I really, really believe in this idea that design is discourse, mm-hmm. in that, you know, I could have sat down and just wrote every week these wordy laments about how I was pissed that, you know, Wizards wasn't putting out the kind of material I wanted, or that I didn't see my attitudes as a gamer reflected in a lot of the stuff that I was reading. And I could have just bitched about it for, you know, 2 years, but I was like, well, I can do that, or I can just simply sort of be the change that I want to be and just embody that through the work that I do and hope that people see it as legitimate and see it as well done. And they go, okay, you know what? Maybe I can run a mega dungeon in 4E, or maybe I can throw in a save or die effect and no one's going to flip their shit. And it seems to have worked. Like, if there's one thing, if I could kind of get a point in outside of what I talked about in the article that kind of came afterwards, I got a lot of people who came out of the woodwork and were dozens of people who commented or emailed me or direct message and saying, like, you know, this really sucks that this is coming to an end. You've never heard from me, but you changed my life as a dungeon master.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, where the hell were you like 2 weeks ago? but I mean, I got a lot of people who were just like, I was really blown away because I always saw fourth core as way, way less influential and interesting as people said it was, because they were like, oh, this is a movement that's changing D&D forever. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really don't think so. But all these people kind of came out and said that it changed them. It fundamentally changed the way that they ran games, they designed games. It expanded the horizons as to what D&D and 4th edition could be. And so that's kind of where the afterlife comes in, right? Because it's the post is not simply the death of 4th core, it's the death and the afterlife of 4th core. Excuse me. And so one thing that I'm really, really excited to see and am hoping to actually facilitate through some new stuff on the site is I want people to dig up 4th core's corpse. I want them to just exhume it and pull it out of the dirt and make it their own and create their own 4th core material or their own 4th core inspired material and start putting it out there in the world and really making it their own. Because up until, you know, this morning, 4th core was a brand to me. I never saw it as a movement. I never saw it as some kind of, you know, thing that was going to change the landscape of gaming. It was a brand. I mean, it was a brand and it had some cool gimmicks behind it. But at the end of the day, it was simply a brand. But after today, I see that a lot of people really, really see it as a movement and they treat it as a movement. And I'm not gonna deny it anymore. I'm just gonna embrace it, embrace the fact that people are really, really smitten with it, and that I want to encourage them to make it their own and take the lessons that they kind of drew from our design work and take the stuff they like and create stuff of their own, in the hopes that maybe the gaming landscape will tip a little bit in our favor once again.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how your new game turns out and how it shapes.
I am too.
We'll definitely have to keep tabs on you and have you come back. So.
Oh, for sure. That'd be a lot of fun.
So Tracy, I haven't really got to say hi to you yet.
Hi.
How you doing over there?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just had a good dinner?
Yeah, had a great dinner.
All right. What'd you do?
We talked about D&D for a long time, and I had sangria.
Who's we?
Brian LaBarge, Matt Miranda, and Jim Waite, who goes by TW Wombat on Twitter.
Cool.
It was pretty cool.
Folks.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun.
I'm glad you could come join us after.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry I talked over you the whole time. I didn't even realize we were recording when I was roused from bed to appear here. So I'm sorry.
Thaddeus, you didn't tell him about the rules of Dungeon Master Roundtable?
I don't tell anybody about anything.
This is extreme podcasting. You failed your save, so you got recorded the whole.
Oh, I gotta just.
This is what happens to Matt James every once in a while. He'll just pick up Skype call from me, and suddenly he'll be on a podcast. So you got to be ready at any minute.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're on my contact list now, so it may happen to you again.
Thaddeus is pretty bad about that.
Yeah, well, Scott, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your
well, that's how we got Tracy into our podcast in the first case.
It was a ruse. It was a bait and switch.
Yep. It was just a random call. We got her.
I need to pull that on Jerry. I'm going to do that right now because he is not answering this phone. So, yeah, because we are continuing our podcast. We're going to be doing something a little bit different with it, probably a bit more community focused, and try to spotlight other people's work a lot on it. But I never thought of tricking him into being on the podcast. I've always just asked. That's my problem. You don't ask, you tell. That's how you get through life. But thank you so much for having me onto the show and letting me ramble for the better part of like 20 minutes about whatever it was I posted today.
No problem. We're happy to get your side of the story, because often we can only talk about, you know, the small bits that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to actually hear it from you.
From
you and Mike, basically.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I look forward to listening through what he said.
Yeah, well, it was a lot better than having you on here to actually describe it than me Forrest Gumping my way through my couch psychological examination of your article.
And then the nonstop commentary from Tracy, which I'm sure people are getting pretty tired of, but
I'm everywhere.
I'm everywhere you want to be.
Yeah.
Hey, for the record, Tracy, everybody was really nice and avoided talking about the Monster Vault too, so we wouldn't steal the thunder from the Tome Show.
Nice. Yep. I appreciate
Which
that.
Which is not why I did it, but
I twisted their arms, Tracy. I wouldn't let them do it, otherwise they were all talking about it.
I was going to do it, but I don't have it yet, and that's the only reason.
I'm playing with the tokens right now.
Just make it up. That's what I...
Is that a euphemism, Mike? I don't want to know what you're doing with your tokens.
Yeah, playing with my
tokens.
Yeah,
the Monster Vault. I got it right here.
I got a Monster Vault.
Oh, hey.
All right, and on that note, I think we're going to go ahead and say goodbye.
Yeah.
So say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Good night.